And aloha. You are listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea. This is Kauai Soapbox Live with Felicia. We are here and we've got a lot of things to talk about. We've got friends in the studio. Let me try one more time. Jennifer, can you say something on your...
Aloha.
Hello. There you are.
We're there.
And then Margaret. And Jerry, are you in there? Okay, here's my Eric coming in to help me. All right, so that was a rare start for us. Stumbling for a second there. I appreciate everybody who does underwrite this show. I also want to give a shout out right now to NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. They're doing a really great ocean awareness training program, and that's going to be held in August in Princeville. That's going to be held in Princeville, and the registration fee is $10, so it's very, very inexpensive, and it covers the training materials. So that's going to be August 14th. It's a Wednesday, the next one, the 21st, and the 28th, from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m., and so it's going to really have a lot of good information about the ocean. And so you can find more on that on oceanawarenesshawaii.org. Great show. All right. Eric, how are you?
I am doing great. Sorry to be a little late.
No problem. So a lot of this show is going to be looking at a big issue that's going on in our island, in our community, which is this Ordinance 2491, also known as the Right to Know Ordinance. It's a bill with the county, and it is about what's being sprayed. And the call-in number is 826-7771. I want to give out a lot of love to the West Side. Two of my guests, Margaret and Jerry, both live on the West Side. And are you on there, Jerry? Are you on?
Thank you, Felicia.
Okay, maybe she's... Okay. Yeah, there she is. Okay, so... having sound problems. All right, but we are up. So a lot of issues have been going on about that, and what I really want to start off with is that this isn't about hurting the farm workers over there or even their companies. It's about encouraging change that works for the better health benefit of all of us.
Absolutely. You know, we really feel for the safety of the field workers. They definitely are on the front line as much as we are concerned about the children and the residents, the visitors, and the land. The field workers, too, are put in a really hard position, and we see this in industrial agricultural areas around the world, that this chronic exposure to pesticides, even at small doses, has major effects, health effects, on the people living and working closest to it.
And then I think, you know, like I've had the good opportunity to meet a few of the people that are higher up in administration, and I do believe that they really do believe the science that's put out by their industry. I think at a sincere level, many of them do really feel that they have basically a safe work environment, you know, so that's the interesting divide. Those of us who don't believe they have a safe work environment don't believe the science and the regulators, and those who do feel like they have a safe work environment do believe the science and the regulators. So I want to acknowledge that there's that fallout or that difference.
Yes, I have a hard time really thinking that these people at the management level are truly concerned, because when you look back at the business models of these chemical corporations, for decades now they've come into communities that are vulnerable, that maybe don't have a voice on network TV, major news coverage, and they take advantage time and time again. They poison, deny, keep spraying, and fight any type of testing, of investigation, or research, and ends up being left to the community to become citizen scientists and try and piece things together. People who are exposed, it's hard. You know, the people who signed up to be a part of the lawsuit, it's really hard. They don't really want to have, you know, their personality out there publicly and be sharing their health issues. And we applaud them, and we pray for their return to wholeness and health. But they're very brave, and these companies are denying everything, every question along the way.
I was going to say, how long has this lawsuit been going on for, like 2.5 years? Or?
You know, it started, the first few meetings were in November 2011. Mm-hmm. The suit was filed in January 2012, and they've been going through disclosure. The chemical companies, you know, really take their sweet time. And along the way, these people are still exposed. The spraying continues. Poison, yeah. Poison, poison.
So obviously this isn't a quick process, and it must be extremely taxing on the families that have started this lawsuit. So thank you to all the families who are still out there fighting and listening. So.
And Eric, you filmed the presentation that was made by the attorneys for the Westside families about a week and a half ago. And did you get the condensed version up?
Yeah, I made the long version, the whole 1 hour and 20 minutes, and mm-hmm. then I just finished the 15-minute version. That's why I'm 5 minutes late for the show.
But, is it online?
It should be online right now, but I just checked Vimeo, and it should be condensing or
okay,
something's
so
going
it's
on.
Not quite up yet.
But
so.
That's good, because you're not allowed to watch it until the show's over, because you guys got to listen to us, so it should be up after 6.
Okay, well, that's a good short synopsis of what the people there are contending with. And, Margaret, you work in a medical facility on the West Side, is that correct?
Yes, I do. I'm a primary care provider on the West Side.
Mm-hmm. And so have you worked anywhere other than the West Side?
I've worked Kapaa Side, I've worked Lihue Side, and now Waimea.
So when you've worked Kapaa, Lihue, and Waimea, do you find that you have basically the same panorama of health challenges in each clinic as people come in, or do you see a difference in the Waimea clinic?
I see a heavier emphasis or prevalence of respiratory effects, especially almost daily dry hacking coughs with sore throats that go on for weeks at a time. And normally this would be treated with allergy medication, nasal sprays that don't seem to work for these symptoms. I've also had whole families come in, and just moving from another part of the island, as soon as they moved, started having asthma and other conditions such as seizure disorders, nosebleeds, and in talking to other providers, a high rate of newborn heart disorders.
Hmm. That's pretty heavy. And now, I know that there's an issue with fugitive dust. How likely is it that it's just coming from the dust?
Well, Waimea is a dusty town, and it's a windy town. And I have patients who talk a lot about dust and the dust that they're trying to constantly wipe off their fans, wipe off their screens, wipe off their countertops. And I'd say that that's very likely that it's coming from that.
Mm. And then, Jennifer, you're with the Pesticide Action Network.
Right.
And is the symptoms that she spoke of, does that correlate to your knowledge with any of the particular pesticides?
Well, atrazine and glyphosates are particularly known for those type of health problems. Personally, I am not a scientist, but our organization has done extensive research and has a lot of resources that supports what the claims are in Waimea.
Now, glyphosate and atrazine, those are common over-the-counter chemicals like that could be bought in Roundup, or what does the atrazine typically come in? It's called that right on the package, right?
Right, that's the brand name, atrazine.
It's made by Syngenta?
It's made by Syngenta. Here on the worker label, they call it atrazine. It's incredibly long-lasting, especially in water. You know, it doesn't break down in water which is why it's been banned in so many places. It's something you definitely don't want into your groundwater source.
So these aren't restricted use pesticides that you're speaking of right now, and like a person could be using that right in their, your neighbor could be using that along your fence line. Is that correct, Jerry?
I think that atrazine is a restricted use pesticide, if I'm not mistaken, yes.
Okay, yeah. Margaret is saying yes, it is. Do you know,
yeah,
Jennifer?
It's a restricted use pesticide.
Okay, so atrazine is. So when we have these pieces, like I know some questions that have come up, I've heard a number of different questions that have come up, like how does this affect the small farmer? My understanding is it really doesn't impact the small farmer because it's only the consumers of large volume of the restricted use pesticides?
Yes, exactly, Felicia. We don't want to put any burden on anyone who's growing food. We're at this very pivotal spot on in our time here as we reach for locally grown food and increasing local farmers. So we don't want to put burden. This bill is not focused at all. We've gone to great lengths to not focus on food farmers. This is focusing on industrial agriculture. This is focusing on chemical corporations who are doing experimental crops of herbicide-tolerant grains and insecticide-producing grain crops that are being grown for seed. It does also include Kauai Coffee because I think of their large amount of land and the chemicals. They are using quite a bit of restricted use pesticides, we believe. So really the point of the whole bill is to let us know what is being sprayed by the industrial agricultural experiments. They are spraying their chemicals. It's so much different than on a farm. The industrial agriculture is spraying multiple chemicals, multiple restricted use chemicals, and they're using the big giant nitro sprayers. They have really tall tires. They have big arms that swing out with, you know, multiple sprayers, and they actually drive through the corn when it's tall. So they're spraying, much of the time they're spraying way off the ground, you know, 4, 5, 6 feet up. It makes it extremely prone to drift, and it's very excessive. It is very, very excessive. Imagine, you know, what you would spray just to kill weeds, but if you are creating an herbicide-tolerant crop, you're going to be spraying much, much more because the plant can tolerate the herbicide. So it just allows you to spray in greater, greater volume, and that's our big concern.
I didn't know that Kauai Coffee uses pesticides, too. That's crazy.
Most large agriculture do use pesticides. Most large agriculture that has to use equipment, is that pretty? When I see the organic farms, I really don't see big, heavy equipment coming through. When you have the large monocropping, you have equipment that comes and harvests it. And, you know, they when equipment is doing the harvest, that typically needs to not have a bunch of combined plants. And so that's why the pesticides are used to keep it just the one crop.
Exactly. And you hit it, Felicia, with the monocropping. When you have large industrial ag that's just planting one big thing, they're very susceptible to bugs. You know, they're planting for volume, and a lot of, you know, they say higher yield, but really what they're doing is they're planting closer together. They're planting more plants, there's less airflow, and they're much more susceptible to disease. And they're coming from a different perspective than food farmers that are really looking for nutrition, for value-added products, and for a healthy farm where they can have children and beneficial insects.
Right. I think we're going through big paradigm shifts. You know, we have, you know, these windows of time. I remember maybe like 30 years ago being in Europe and going around the countries that were struggling a little bit more, like Portugal, which almost seemed like what we would call a third world country. And it was so beautiful because it was subsistence farm after subsistence farm, just this network of probably 2-acre house lots and old houses, but, you know, vined and with a little bit of sheep and goats, just a little bit of everything right in their narrow space. And that's how agriculture was for a very long time. And then the outcome of having industrialized agriculture is most of us have moved to the cities. And in some ways, it's kind of like the alcoholic blaming the liquor store. When we get mad at big agriculture, you know, it's a chicken and the egg situation. Like, as big ag started happening, people moved and had more sophisticated jobs and started going to the grocery store, and we went through a big disconnect. And we need to be moving back towards more and more of these smaller farms, I think. I mean, I think that that would be really good. I will say that, again, I'm being, you know, trying to respect these guys in this industry when I've spoken to some of the heads in there. I'm pausing for a moment because when I went to the Waimea presentation, that kind of blew my mind a little bit, because it seemed like when we saw the court briefings versus the public statements, there was a lot of disconnect. It was almost 180 degrees away from what they're saying to the public versus what they're saying to the court. So yeah. That was really a little bit of a game changer for me in my extension of compassion to the...
Like, to the public, they're extremely nice. They have a lot of things that they say, a lot of promises. But then when it comes to their actually political, legal side, it is completely separate. And it
sounds
shows
pretty
that.
Heartless and cold, yeah, on the court record.
When they're forced to show what they've actually been doing and to actually defend themselves, you see the true side of what they're actually taking. And
or we see a pretty rough side.
It's pretty cold and heartless. You know, for children to be sickened at school and to have these major corporations not even have compassion, have enough compassion to truly look into this honestly, I don't have a lot of respect. You know, after all of these years, here we are left to try and pick away and find some truth. And that is just totally unacceptable. These people are, for some reason, you know, saying that pesticides are not toxic, that they're not harmful, and all the things that we are finding reports to the contrary.
They say that.
Unbelievable.
They say that to the people, and then you read their training manuals, which they're handing out to their employees, and it says, be careful, this is really toxic, we don't know what the long-term effects are, and it pretty much says all of our concerns right there in their own manuals.
And have a full-time RN.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of
at least they do
ridiculous.
Have the full-time RN. Speaking of which, I see you've brought a bunch of papers with you. What are you looking at there?
I'm looking at one of the restricted use pesticides, Lors Ban Advantage, which is one of the, well, I guess there's probably about 15 of them altogether. And I read through this earlier, and there was a alert to physicians on how to treat acute exposure, and I'm looking for that. It's very alarming.
Okay, we'll let you find that. But we are hoping, I mean, I'm hoping, let me just be clear, I'm hoping that, and I do believe at some level these companies are willing to shift a little bit of their behavior. I'm going to hold on to the good. I have to admit, I like them as individuals. They're good human beings, and I believe that they believe that they're not doing bad, some of them at least,
yeah.
Anyway. They've at least convinced me that they believe.
It's not like they're evil or anything. It's just they don't know that they're wrong.
Okay, and we don't have them in here. So, like, if they want to call in, 826-7771, you're welcome to do that. When I look at the 500-foot buffer, to me, I think, well, use that as another test field, a test field of not using chemicals. Like, perhaps they can put little zones in there where they are trying to grow their crops a little bit more holistically, though being right next to a poison field on a long-time poison field, that might be difficult. But maybe they could come up with some really good methods of creating bioremediation right on the edges there. Hopefully they would move away from poisoning at all. But, I mean, at least in my heart, I'm not trying to shut down all these industries. I just want them to shift their direction. Just move the way the consumer market wants it. I think consumer demand is definitely expressing they would prefer to eat food that they can really trust.
It's not like we're asking the companies to close down. We're just asking them to be a little bit more open to the community that they're all around and make sure that everything they're doing is healthy and doesn't have any negative health effects to the people or the land.
Everything we're requesting of the companies, and this only applies to the four main ag companies, five main ag companies on Kauai, and they're all very reasonable requests. We just want disclosure. We don't want the pesticides going into our air and our waterways and into our schools and where the public congregates. We don't want any open-air testing because these are tests. They're testing organisms that are not yet approved for human consumption or release into the open environment.
So would that be all of their fields?
Excuse me?
I mean, like, I'm trying to understand that. Like, when I hear their rebuttal, is everything they do an open-air test?
Well, how are we supposed to know if they're not required to disclose that to us?
Okay, so that would be like if... Because when they say, no, we're not doing testing, maybe they aren't, right? But then they could disclose that, and we would learn that they aren't.
Right.
Did you find what you're looking for, Margaret?
Yeah, I did come across a couple warnings. There's actually many in the 17-page label for Lorsban Advanced, which is one of the restricted use pesticides. The first page, warning, may be fatal if swallowed, causes skin irritation, causes moderate eye irritation, harmful if inhaled, prolonged or frequent repeated skin contact may cause allergic reactions. And some individuals, do not get on skin or on clothing, avoid contact with eyes and breathing vapor or spray mist, wash thoroughly with soap and water after handling and before eating, drinking, chewing gum, using tobacco, or using the toilet. And then it has first aid for physicians. If swallowed, immediately call a poison control center. Do not induce vomiting unless told to do so by a poison control center or a doctor. This is because of the erosive nature of this chemical could cause the airway and the esophagus to erode if you were to vomit. And then if inhaled, move person to fresh air. If person is not breathing, call 911 or an ambulance. Then give artificial respiration, preferably mouth-to-mouth if possible. Call a poison control center or doctor for further treatment advice. So that's just a kind of a snippet of the 17-page label that goes along with Lorsban Advanced Restricted Use Pesticide.
Thank you. And you're listening to KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea. That was Margaret, a health provider on the west side. We have a couple callers. Let's see who you have online. Aloha, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello? Hello.
Yes. Okay, I'm going to turn my radio down. Did I just hear you guys? Oh, my name is Susan Allen, and I own Savage Shrimp down in Puipu.
Okay.
Did I hear you guys just say that you don't want these industries on Kauai to shut down?
Well, I mean, my position is, we all have different positions in the room. I just was claiming my bias and my position, and, you know, I would like to see them shift to do good things. I mean, if anybody can do large-scale agriculture right, a company with this much size and this much power, maybe they could. I know that that's kind of a long shot, but why not? Why not hope for that? I hope that they just shift their energy and start, you know, growing more organically. That's my hope. But go ahead. Tell me how you feel.
I guess this is the way I feel because I've lived here for so long. I lived on the North Shore of Oahu for 30 years and now Kauai for 17 years. I've seen what's going on. I've been affected by what's going on. No, what we need from these people is a timeline for them to leave these islands. That's how I feel. You know, all this stuff goes on behind closed doors. Why don't they tell us about that?
Well, we're certainly on that same page, and certainly the bill is asking for that.
The bill isn't asking for them to leave.
I hope the bill gets passed, but, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I don't, you know, I don't think that we should be giving these companies any more aloha. You know, no more aloha for GMO companies all over the world, especially here on Kauai and on the North Shore of Oahu.
Well, I mean, tell us how it's affecting your shrimp farm, and where is your shrimp farm?
I don't have a shrimp farm. I have a restaurant.
Oh, okay. And
but you want me to tell you how it's affecting me?
Sure. Yes, please.
Okay. In August, I live at Salt Pond. On August, I swim there every day. In August, August of 2011, I went swimming, and I came out of the water. My face was like somebody threw acid on my face because I'm an ex-surfer, I have a bunch of tiny skin cancers all over my body.
Mm.
It was like somebody threw acid on my face where all the little skin cancers lit up. I called the Department of Parks and Recreation. Have you guys been spraying the beach with any kind of chemical? They said, no, it wasn't them. They haven't sprayed the beach. It was the runoff from the corn company, from the corn fields that are just a block away. That's at Salt Pond. Last year, I got a cold in September and didn't get over it until March.
Our health practitioner that's in here is nodding her head vigorously. Are you seeing that with
this? This is what I commonly see. And the approaches to a chronic cough or bronchitis or asthma are not working very well. And that's something I'm not familiar with in say Lihue in the past. And Kapa is, they're fairly effective. The inhalers for asthma, the nasal sprays for allergies, the Claritin for allergies, and I'm not seeing them very effective.
And by the way, when was the last time you guys took a little ride up to Wailua Falls? Because up there, it blew my mind. I took a visitor. I haven't been up there in ages. All those beautiful, beautiful, beautiful open fields are now being planted with corn.
Well, I hear those concerns, and that's part of why that there's a moratorium in this bill, because and I know that is something that is less supported by a number of the council members, and the moratorium until there is an environmental impact statement is something very, very important to a lot of people. And I know that there's actually a lot of contention among the people who are worried about this issue over 2491 because it doesn't go far enough, like for people in Waimea and Kekaha and right in the affected areas, it still kind of leaves them hanging out to dry because it says, tell us what you're doing, but it really doesn't stop it very much.
Right. And look, this is just food for thought because I was just thinking about this the other day. You know, I don't begrudge anybody for owning land in Hawaii. I mean, I own my own land. I own a piece of property here. But these large landowners, they've got to think about this land that they were gifted or it was sold to them years and years ago, that the land is the Hawaiian people. The Aina is the Hawaiian people. There's not too many pure Hawaiians left. And I was thinking about this, that when, I don't know which Kamehameha it was either the fourth or the fifth, when he sold half of Kauai to the Mrs. Sinclair, I believe it was Eliza Sinclair or Catherine Sinclair, the land. You know, we always say Kauai's never been conquered before. Well, guess what? He's conquered it now by selling this land to the Robinsons, Gay and Robinson, which leases out a lot of this property to these GMO farms. So now it has been conquered. So he's laughing in his grave.
Well, and I know that a lot of the land is DHHL, too, Department of Hawaiian Homelands, and they are public lands. And so, and my understanding is that there's very little property tax being paid. Is that correct, Jerry?
You know, that seems to be the case. It's another point that we don't have full disclosure on, but the more we scratch the surface, the more we find that we're being left with all of the liability and no gains at all from this type of experimental land use. We're losing you know, they're having free access to water and paying very little for the land. And we once again are going down this road of being stuck with the cleanup costs. But Sue, your stories are extremely important to hear what is happening to people like you everywhere from, you know, Polihali to Poipu to Hanama'ulu. This is exactly what we need on Wednesday the 31st, are for people to come out. It's going to be a long day, but please, we need the county council to hear these stories. We need people to come and tell the stories of their neighbors that cannot be here. Because this is, you know, Coconut Wireless at its finest. We need to get these things told.
And if you do send in testimony to counciltestimony@kauai.gov, make sure to give your full name and which county.
Oh, I did already. I've sent it in. I'm going to be. I'm not able to make all of y'all's your gatherings, but when you do, I'm praying for you. Praying for y'all's hearts and your way be lit and that we get something done here, but I will be at that meeting.
And
I'm sorry for the sound of my voice, the way, you know, the anger in my voice, but I'm now really pissed off that this has been going on for so long, and it's not getting smaller, it's getting bigger.
Well, I'm sorry for the injuries that you've had, and I know that somebody took like 1,000 amazing photos. I saw a bunch of aerial shots that are out of all these different fields, and there are heavy runoff pictures in Waimea and Kekaha, and it is very, very evident from the sky of that trail of runoff and effluent and basically topsoil out in the ocean, but we know that it carries these pesticides that are on top of it. So when you say you're surfing out there, yeah, you're surfing in it.
But anyway, thank you guys. I just had to make that remark.
You're welcome, and I'm sorry if I...
You know, and I do have a lot of malama for the people that are working for them, you know, that have jobs over there.
We got to find them work.
Like big co-op organic farms. How about that?
Yeah.
Or just big co-op farms. They don't have to be organic.
We're working on that. Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Bye.
Mahalo.
Okay, and you two have a quick comment, and I've got somebody who's been holding for a very long time.
Just real quick on the jobs thing. This bill will not cost any jobs, so I just wanted to clear that up.
My point is that on the west side, the people have a tremendous amount of aloha. They're warm, they're welcoming, they're soft-spoken, they're trusting, and this is being taken advantage of, and that's what I see a lot of.
Okay, let's take our next caller. You are on the air. Thank you for being so patient.
Hey, thank you for giving me time to voice.
Okay, well, you're on. It's now.
Yeah. I had a question, but before that, I just wanted to make a quick comment on the discussion I just heard. When you look at a lot of the environmental debates, especially, there seem to be some really strong lines drawn between liberal and conservative. And this is an issue that's very interesting because you have even people like Glenn Beck, for example, who's on record saying Monsanto is evil. He said that several times, and he means it. So
who's Glenn Beck?
He's a very prominent right-wing talk show host on the radio.
All right.
Maybe like number 3 or 4 in the pecking order.
Okay.
And he's been on record. You know, he's on 5 days a week, and he's, you know, with Hannity and Limbaugh, you know, and Savage, number 3 or 4. But in any case, that's a sign that we're hitting on a nerve and a truth here when you get those two sides agreeing, because it certainly very rarely happens. And at the same time, I'd like us to be really careful about things like, let's just get it off our island and maybe keep the big picture, the big planetary picture in mind about this, because we're all connected, and just watching out for our little area here is not enough when we look at the big picture in 7 generations, et cetera. We want to find the truth about this, and if this is not healthy for future generations and for the planet, then we need to adjust things.
Hey, caller, I completely agree with you 100%. You know, it's what we're doing is great for our island, and it's one thing to think about just getting them off the island and just letting the rest of the world deal with this. But, you know, for such a small island and for such a small population, we have so much power and energy that we're putting into this movement. And, you know, why stop with our island? Why not spread this to the rest of the world? I know there's an online newspaper working on an article about this GMO story that's happening on the west side. So, you know, that's going to hit national news. And you know what? Maybe we can affect other people and get them active in their communities all around the U.S. and, you know, the rest of the world. I know the rest of the world's far ahead of the U.S. on this, but...
Well, that's why I advocate for a shift within the industry, because the industry does dominate the food chain, and they shift, then the whole food chain shifts. I know that we, as the United States, not to offend anybody, but calling this the United States, but the United States and Hawaii, you know, we are holdouts in supporting this industry. Monsanto, which is the largest of the industry, really did almost pull up stakes in Europe this week. They stated that they are no longer going to try and cultivate their plants there. It's happening all over the world. We are one of the last.
Well, just as, you know, a final positive thought on that, regardless of race, we're all indigenous. And some people care about the earth and some people don't. That's just the way it is. But here's my practical question and what I called about. For this meeting on the 31st, which I'm planning on attending, what is the agenda going to be? Is it going to be primarily or solely to deal with the pesticides, or will it also deal with the growth of GMO crops to some degree, or is it open for both?
This particular meeting, they'll be starting this part of the agenda. This is a public hearing with the county council. It just happens to be that they're anticipating such a large crowd that it is being held off-site at the Kauai Community College Performing Arts Center. But when the meeting begins at 1:30, this will be the only thing on the agenda. So we will be, they will be taking public comment on Bill 2491. The bill begins by asking for disclosure of restricted use chemicals.
Okay.
And if a company is using restricted use chemicals and is falls under this definition by this bill, they will also be disclosing the licensed chemicals like Roundup and also the experimental chemicals if they use any. So if they are using restricted use, it's going to trigger disclosure across the board for all pesticides being sprayed.
But it wouldn't affect the small farms then, is that correct?
No, because they're not using volume of restricted use. Even the large golf courses and nursery applications, they're comparative to the chemical experiments. Their use is very, very tiny. And once again, we do not want to put the burden on anybody who is trying to grow food on their farm for the people of Kauai. So this is disclosure for the industrial agriculture. It says that we should have buffer zones near schools, communities, and streams. The streams include the ditches and the rivers and the coastal area. Which really goes to show how they are really experimenting in such a sacred site.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they're so close to the waterways. There's just absolutely no reason they should be there in the first place. But buffer zones is something that they have enacted in other places. And then, you know, when we say the word moratorium, this would be something that would stop any new experimental crops while we look into this deeper. So we've, for 10 years, have been saying, let's look into this deeper. They've just continued to grow and expand and poison. We are saying, put the brakes on a violent act until we get, you know, some disclosure, some facts, and a true good look at what's happening to our communities.
So you're saying this bill, then, is about disclosure of the pesticides and a moratorium. And so
a moratorium on growth.
Right. So with that in mind, do you folks suggest that people that come there with a voice, a story, an opinion, really stay focused on that and not go off on things like, hey, we don't want anything grown here, or do you think it's a better idea to just let people talk about whatever they want? What do you folks
think? I think it is the most respect to the council and the whole process if people keep it to the ordinance that's under okay. suggestion, and that they speak to the impacts of the pesticides, because this ordinance is not really about the GMOs too
okay.
much. It is mostly about the heavy use of the pesticides.
I think that's really important for people to know that don't know as much as you folks. And I'll let you take the next caller, but just as a final note on this, from what I understand, the pesticides that they're using right now on Kauai are measured in units of tons. So let's just let people think about that. Tons of units of pesticides being used on this island yearly. And I'll let the next question.
I think
question.
It's approximately about 18 tons last year. Thank
if
you.
That does, if, thank you, folks. Aloha.
Okay.
This is Margaret. Something comes to mind about the list of restricted use pesticides. There's something called potentiation. Take an example of Excedrin migraine. You mix Tylenol, you mix aspirin, and then you put caffeine in, which makes the Tylenol and the aspirin more effective. So I haven't heard what the effects are of layering these chemicals and what new harms come from that, and what potentiators come from that. That to me is a very big concern, because people are on prescription medications, diabetics, hypertension, and then we've got chemicals on top of prescription medications.
Mm-hmm. And I have to give a shout out to Excedrin migraine, because it works. It's a little addictive though. you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
So
I'm listening to your conversation, and I was just thinking, you guys are all really correct on this, but as a 14-year-old in middle school, we don't really learn about civics and ethnics and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We're not prepared to fight the GMO corporations and stuff as we get older and are able to. Because of the deregulation laws, we're not able to, fix it ourselves.
Help me understand what you're trying to say, because it's really important.
Because
you're saying that you don't feel prepared to make a judgment on this issue?
Yeah, because, I'm only 14, I'm still in middle school, and so we don't learn about this stuff in school, so we're kind of lost to the world, if you know what I mean.
Well, you're listening to this radio station. So
I know, but that's okay. Me, but other people, other students.
I want to applaud you for looking at both sides of the issue. I think that at 14, 12, 13, it's really, really important to try and, whenever you see something that's all in one position, then you want to go, okay, that's a perspective. Then you look at the other side, and you have to kind of look back and forth. And even just when you begin thinking about it, your growth starts happening.
I was going to say, it's funny, because when I was, you said you're 14?
Yeah.
Yeah, when I was 14 in ninth grade, I had to do a report, and I chose GMOs because it sounded really cool, and I looked up all this research, and I was so stoked on it, you know, it's so cool. I thought it was really cool, and I was all for it back then, and then I kept doing research as I got older, and I realized it's not all that it's pumped up to be, but that was just me as I grew up, so I really think it's cool what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. And if I was to give you a recommendation, what I have recommended to myself, and with only marginal success recommended to my kids, if you eat whole foods, if you eat an apple, you eat an egg, if you eat things that you can look at and there's one ingredient in it, that's lettuce, and you wash those things, you almost can't go wrong with what you're eating. You know, for the most part, you'll be healthy.
No, but what I'm saying is, because you guys are taxpayers and you vote, and we can't do that, so we can't, vote to, we can't hold the mayor and the governor and the president accountable for our things, because we can't vote for that, but you guys can. So if you guys are so into this subject about this, you guys should press for it, for your future generation to do it. So when we get the chance, and we're not learning it, so when we do get the chance and we're older, we're not going to be lost. And it's a Congress thing because there's no deregulation laws for the GMO, and so if Congress goes and puts it in, then they'll be fine.
Well, I want to correct one thought there, and you do have a voice, and you're using it now, and you are so welcome to come to the county council or the planning department or any of these places. You can talk to the mayor, and I will tell you truly, these people care that are in those positions, and they will listen to you, and your voice does matter.
To back up what Felicia says, it's not about when you grow old and when you have a chance to vote and make a difference. You know, maybe that's what you're led on to believe, but really, you can make a huge difference right now. As Felicia said, calling up onto this radio show is making a difference. But even a simple letter to your mayor or any of your local politicians, that'd be extremely moving to get a well-written letter from a 14-year-old who's concerned about her local Ina, you know, and the people living in it. Because, you know, one day you will be in charge of the stuff and everything that's going on in this island. So it's important that you start making moves now.
And regularly, Okay. Kids do testify, and their opinion matters deeply. And we all care about you.
Okay.
Thank you so much for calling.
Thank you. Bye.
Aloha.
Thank you for holding. You're on the air.
Oh, hi. Yeah, my name's Angela Flynn, and I am a resident here in Kauai. I've been a farmer and landscaper for about 15 years. Used a lot of pesticides over the years, some mostly by force on jobs that I had with other employees. And, you know, it's easy for these pesticides to be used in conditions they're not supposed to be used in. A lot of them say, don't use when it's windy out. Well, wind comes up very suddenly. I just, you know, kind of want to throw that out there. But really, one of the things I wanted to bring up is, as my understanding, this moratorium from the bill would only limit farmers from growing or using experimental pesticides. Well, the biotech industry claims, and I heard this in a phone call last night, a town hall meeting that I got straight from biotech representatives here on the island, that they do not use experimental pesticides. But then they go to claim that this bill would cost them 500 jobs. And so I'm wondering, where are these 500 jobs going to be lost from if they're not even using experimental pesticides? How will they be affected by the bill? Any speculation on this?
Well, you're bringing up a really good question. And I think that there's maybe some fear and some misinformation. It was interesting. I got a call just before I came to the show that was by the Hawaii Seed.
I got a call, too. It's the Kauai Crop Improvement Association.
Oh, yeah, Hawaii Crop Improvement Association. And so I was asked a question if I would oppose this bill, that, and it gave me, like, 4 points. But they were all inaccurate characterizations. They really were. So I said to the woman, that is actually not correct in terms of what the bill says, and I started to explain what really the bill said, and she hung up on me.
Yeah, I got that phone call too, and the points I wrote that they said were, where is it here, that they do, oh, I'm sorry, wait.
Mine was not a recording. Mine was
This was a real person too. They said that the bill would stop farmers from using the latest technology to fight pests,
yes,
limit their use of seeds, and cost 500 jobs.
Yes.
And, again, where are these jobs going to be lost if they're not using experimental pesticides? Because that's what the bill will limit, is, you know, they won't be able to use these. So, you know, there's obviously, I believe they're using experimental pesticides, and they don't really want to come out and say that. And just as the other thing, the USDA just in May said that they are going to prepare 2 separate environmental impact statements on the growing of 2,4-D resistant corn. So even the USDA is stepping up and saying, we need to look into this. We need more environmental studies. So the biotechs like to present it as, you know, it's just kind of a handful of activists who are worried about this. But there's legitimate concerns. Countries all over the world are not wanting biotech foods or crops grown in their country. you know, Kauai is ground zero, and it's important that we take them on. Apparently, I just looked at the Hawaii Crop Improvement Association's website, and they say that Hawaii is the world's leading producer of seed corn, which accounts for 96% of our state's 247.2 million biotech industry. So that's a lot of biotech corn being grown in Hawaii. And
I think that's accurate. And when I look at the business model that they're under, it seems to me like an arms race between the different companies and nature, because we're getting these super weeds and super bugs. So the escalation is in the wrong direction. And I think if there was no complaints from the citizens, this shift would happen anyway. Because when we look at the yields and the reports around the world where it isn't working out very well, they are having their own problems. I think the change would happen anyway, but it's better to shift that direction early before we have deeper and greater destruction. So let's just shift, turn the boat around, start growing right. That's what I say, you know.
Yeah.
So, the moratorium doesn't stop anything. It doesn't stop anything that they're doing. It only halts further projects and further expansions. They can keep doing whatever they're doing now. And so the claim that they're making that it's going to lose 500 jobs would mean that they're going to lose 500 jobs that just didn't exist yet. So it just simply doesn't make sense that this bill would cost jobs.
Well, in all fairness, maybe that it creates some overhead and some costs and some shifts in the business model that lowers their margin. And many, many businesses, certainly regular farms, live on a very thin margin. So even if these companies make vast money somewhere else, then they have to basically subsidize what's going on over here. I know that they already do subsidize what's going on over here, but most businesses, even if they look like they make a lot of money, maybe they got a 3 or 4% profit margin. When we look at the overall margins for Dow and BASF and these companies, DuPont, it's about a lot more than just the ag. You know, these are multinational companies that have a lot of diversity. So they're able to pull from different areas, but, you know, they do look at what each area is working on. So when they say that they feel like this could shut them down, you know, if they're not dexterous, if they don't make some shifts, yeah, maybe. But any business person knows, and I was a business person for a long time, you have all kinds of market conditions that change. So you shift with them. It is not the end of the world for companies that have the kind of political pull, the kind of global power that they have. They can make the shift if they want to. Right now, they're stubborn, and they don't want to make the shift. They're attached to what they're doing. They don't believe that they're doing it wrong, whether that is willful ignorance or not. I think that that's a little place where they're at. They need to make the shift. They got to accept it. Make the shift. Make the shift. Make the shift. That's what's being demanded. Make the shift.
Absolutely. These companies are going to fight tooth and nail. They are already disseminating inaccurate facts. They are the perfect example of greed gone wild. They do not want to lose $1. They will tell the people working for them their jobs are at risk, when in fact that is not true. You know, the amount of toxicity that these people are bringing to our island year after year, you know, that 18 tons that we have learned about through is 1 year, and it's only restricted use. So that's probably 30%. When we talk about the EPA and the FDA looking at further studies on the dicamba and 2,4-D crops before commercial release, we have to remember that it continues to be grown here on Kauai. These crops are right up above Salt Pond. While we have been trying to educate our county council, you know, year after year, they have put up a huge headquarters, a whole fortress, a whole new fortress. They are testing the nastiest stuff that has not been released yet anywhere else. We have that. We are the front line. And that's why we continually caution and squawk about this, because it is unbelievable.
You know, in the Waimea air report that came out, they only tested 24 chemicals, the restricted use chemicals, of the 60 that came up on the list, of the 60 ingredients that they're actually using on these different fields. So, I mean, it is looking pretty poisonous over on the west side from the reports that we've got so far, like in the groundwater and stuff like that. But they're not even testing half the ingredients being used by these companies. So if we get a real clear, accurate test of everything that's actually being used by these companies, we can clearly see what's showing up in the environment around them. So for the little bit that we've tested, we can see there's clear signs.
And we're at the top of the hour. It's a little after 5 o'clock. You are listening to Kauai Soapbox Live, which is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with Anahola Stringed Instruments and the County of Kauai.
Anahola Stringed Instruments, still making guitars, ukulele, and violins one at a time from Kauai's ancient koa. Every tree has its own song. Time-honored designs and precision-built custom orders. Beginning and master instrument building, prompt and complete setup, repair, restoration, and reforestation. Anahola Stringed Instruments proudly supports KKCR. AnaholaStringedInstruments.com or 822-1645.
The County of Kauai's annual Household Hazardous Waste Collection event for residents only. Free, safe disposal of unwanted hazardous products from your home, garage, or yard. Acceptable items include pesticides, solvents, car products, oil-based paints, fluorescent lights, batteries, and more. Latex paint will not be accepted. Collections will be on Saturday, August 10 from 9 to 4 at the Hanalei Transfer Station and Kapa'a Base Yard, and on Sunday, August 11 from 9 to 4 at the Lihue and Hanapepe Transfer Stations. More information from the County Recycling Office at 241-4841 or online at kauai.gov/recycling. Help keep our garden island green. Join us for the Household Waste Collection on August 10th and 11th at a location near you.
You are listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K284AL Haleiwa.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. This is Felicia and
Eric Cannon.
And I've got Margaret, Jennifer, and Jerry in the house. We've got a couple more callers. Aloha, thank you for holding. You're on the air.
Hey, am I on the air?
You are.
Hey, Felicia, this is Nikolai.
Hey, Nikolai.
How you doing?
Good. Now, you're probably going to be a middle-of-the-roader. I know you, and I know that you have a lot of reasons sometimes to use different chemicals. Do you have a permit for restricted-use chemicals, pesticides?
Me?
Yeah?
I've taken a training course on it, but no, I didn't go for the permit. It was more of a training thing.
Okay, so what's on your mind?
I just want to touch on some of the reasons why the bill would cost jobs, or why people think it would cost jobs.
Okay.
And I think one of your last comments when I first got on was spot on, just about like their bottom line, it affecting their bottom line. But the 500-foot buffer, if you read the way the bill was written, it says like a 500-foot buffer from roads, waterways, residences, and schools.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking on a Google Earth map, and, I thought it was going to be a large area cut out around this neighborhood I was thinking of, but it doesn't look that significant. But I remember in the county council meeting, the guy pulled up the map of
BASF fields?
Yeah,
on the west side in the Manaw Plain, yes?
Right. Like, that's the kind of thing why people felt threatened by the bill and why it would cost jobs. I mean, maybe the buffers, I mean, maybe it's just something they need to revise. You know, maybe a 500-foot buffer isn't the best for everywhere, or, you know, maybe I think a lot of the pesticides too, if you look on the labels, actually have buffers already, but
they do. They're like typically 25 feet.
Right, and that's like a good reason to know. It'd be good to know what chemicals they're spraying so that can be evaluated, but yeah, I just want to touch on that the buffers are one of the reasons why people thought it would cost jobs.
Well, when you look at that particular map, though, I saw somebody who this would be unverified because I don't have the capacity to really make that judgment. They took the map that was shown in the county council meeting and put it against a real map, and it looked like it was exaggerated.
It probably was. Like roads is a very vague statement. That's what it said in the bill.
Yeah, it was.
That could be like. It was just at highways.
It was an exaggerated statement. I did hear from somebody. I get calls all the time when I'm not on air. That agriculture piece there too is actually a buffer against the military base. The military base needs a buffer zone. But to me, it's an interesting statement that all these things are put right up against the roadside, right up against the neighborhoods or the schools. We see a lot of the newer fields are really quite set back, like a caller mentioned about in near Wailua Falls. And somebody took a bunch of pictures, a whole lot of really super quality pictures of these fields all over the place from the air. And there are many, you know, nestled back where we don't know about them. So it's a little alarming to know that we don't know about them and what's going on. But it looks like that in some of the new development, they are not putting it right in front of, you know, the Hawaiian homes or right against the schools. They are already moving into the hinterlands.
Right.
But it is interesting to see how much brown fields are around it. And so as a permaculturist, all that exposed brown soil to me looks like where you dry out the landscape, where you have the erosion, where you have those issues. So I personally feel that if they change their agricultural practices right now, while they think it's really expensive to do it, that actually they would gain money because they would have more water, less dust. They could put their investment more into people than machines. They could put more investment into other crops than poisons. That is my novice experience with plants, but one in which I feel like I have some experiment. So you think that that seems somewhat accurate?
Oh, yes, very much.
And you work with them. Go ahead.
I think like there's a lot of just good agricultural practices that they're not doing, like windbreaks. You know, maybe you wouldn't need that buffer if they had windbreaks. Maybe it would only need to be like a 100-foot buffer if there was a wooded area there that was acting.
And that's actually in my statement, is I'm wanting to extend and expand the ordinance to have living and cloth windbreaks. If they put windbreaks up against a stand of either really tall bananas or tall ironwoods or something like that, it would be better business for them. And it would be helpful.
Yeah, and NRCS, the National Resource Conservation Service, or is it one of those agencies? Yeah, they probably work with them a lot, and I don't know why they don't do windbreaks. It's kind of a criticism I've always had towards those companies. But windbreaks and cover crops, and I mean, there's a whole range of things they'd be doing in terms of doing better agriculture.
Yeah.
There was a study that came out. There was a reason why they didn't do cover crops. It's just because they didn't have the numbers worked out, and it was too much of a risk. But those numbers have since been worked out. I think they partnered up with CTAR, the College of Tropical Agriculture and Human Resources, and it turned out that when they do the cover crops, it actually costs the same as what you see now is called a bare dirt fallow, where they just leave the dirt bare and they have to herbicide the dirt, and it's like a weed control technique. But the cover crops, they found out that a lot of them can act as a weed control while serving all these other benefits. So, yeah.
Well, when I got a tour of the Dow facility, I saw that they use sun hemp and I forget, a certain kind of like cowpea as a cover crop. They, you know, they're making an effort, and you could see where they have some no-till, at least, you know, because all that I saw was a no-till method where you see the last row of corn is still basically lying there in the field. I know they have to spray something on top of that so those seeds don't come up, but, I mean, it's not like they're not making any effort. They are taking steps in the right direction. We just got to give them a little impetus to run in the right direction.
Right.
The buffer zones actually help to enforce what is on the label, because most of the labels do say do not spray near children, do not spray near waterways. So the buffer zones just really help kind of enforce that. And on the mainland where they've been growing GMO corn, you know, and are beginning to have problems with super weeds, weeds that have become immune to the poisons.
Right.
The USDA is starting to encourage buffer zones because if there's a little more diversity in the weeds, it helps, you know, stall off the super weeds, the adapting to, you know, not being able to be killed by pesticides. So buffer
right.
zones are a really important thing. It really just makes good precaution, good sense. There's absolutely no reason they should be close to neighborhoods and schools.
Yes, and those buffers and those windbreaks, too, would slow the wind speed so that they themselves could use their pesticides under, you know, for longer periods of the day, whereas right now they might have to spray early in the morning before the wind kicks up. If there's windbreaks up, then the wind's not going to get as high to begin with, so I mean, it would be in their interest in that regard to be
yeah.
average.
I'm told that some of the reasons that they spray in the early morning hours besides wind, even more importantly, is because that's when those particular pests that they're trying to minimize are active.
Okay, yeah.
So I got somebody else who's been holding for a long time, but I really appreciate your call.
Sure, it's been fun.
Okay.
All right, talk to you later.
Bye-bye. You're on the air. Thank you for being patient.
Aloha. I'm a Westside resident, and I've been following this issue. And it's refreshing to hear somebody like your last caller who brings a lot of common sense there and is looking at the bill, you know, for the merits of the bill itself, which is unlike a phone call I just received from my good friends at the Hawaii Crop Improvement Association. It was very interesting. I just got a phone call that told me their Bill 2491 is going to disallow local farmers from planting any GMO food crops.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And the next thing they said is that the 2491 is also going to disallow local farmers from using any sort of the most current pest control methods. So I was a little disturbed because I don't recall reading any of that in the bill, and I'll hop offline, but I was just a little concerned that these what seem to be untruths things are being, you know, brought into my house unsolicited.
So let me ask you a question, though, because, like, you got apparently the same call I did, and I said, well, I don't think that that's accurate, actually. That's not consistent with my understanding from reading the bill.
Right.
Was it a girl? Did you give her any feedback?
This was a gentleman who I asked, had he read the bill? He said, no, he isn't. He's just reading from his script. And
yes.
He read through his script, and I told him, you know, the things you're telling me are totally incorrect. That is not what the bill says.
Okay, you know what? The woman did say to me, look, I am just reading this. And I you know what? We had similar experiences. I said, read the bill.
Yeah.
No, and then
I made a call to the Hawaii Crop Improvement Association to let them know about my frustration with what just happened, because, you know, it's one thing to go ahead and have a good campaign and a good battle on the actual merits of the bill, and I can appreciate that, and that's how we get democracy in action and make things even better. But, you know, when they're spreading false information as a fear tactic, That's uncalled for.
Yeah, it destroys some of the credibility of that side. You live on the west side. Do you support the bill, or are you in the middle, or do you not support the bill?
No, I support the bill. I mean, I think it makes a lot of sense. There are some tweaks that need to be made, as the gentleman before was talking about. You know, there's a few things that have to be worked out, and that's exactly what should happen at county council, is amendments posed and, you know, the merits of those discussed and come up with the best alternative.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Will you be coming on Wednesday?
I will be.
All right.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Margaret again. I want to say that I get emails almost every day from a patient that was forwarded to her by one of the lawyers about spraying on those particular days. And I would say it's 4 to 7 times a week. And very little is said about the wind drift. And when I look at the label for Lorsban, it says Local terrain can influence wind patterns. Every applicator should be familiar with local wind patterns and how they affect spray drift, and also that spray should not be done over 10 miles per hour. And I never see any of that in the email that's being honored.
Yeah. Okay, I got another caller. Thank you for being patient. You're on the air.
Good show. It's wonderful. I just wanted to say, because it's so on topic, I belong to the Union of Concerned Scientists, and I just got the new magazine, the summer magazine, and the cover is A Vision for U.S. Agriculture, How to Make Every Farm Healthy. It's like just so wonderful, and it's everything that we're talking about. So I'm glad that it's out in the mainstream as well.
So where did you see this?
Union of Concerned Scientists. They put out a quarterly magazine called Catalyst.
Okay.
You know the Union of Concerned
yes,
Scientists.
Yes, I do.
So I was very excited to see this. And I wanted to make another point, too, that, I mean, everybody's talking about that these seed companies are actually chemical companies, and we need to remember that they have an inherent conflict of interest right there because they make chemicals. So we really need to find other people to speak about the pesticides. They are not, you know, they're not credible witnesses is what I want to say.
Okay. Margaret?
Okay. The other thing to consider on that is that the chemicals that are being made by these companies also make medications. So the chemicals, to me, the pattern looks like the chemicals make people sick, and then these same companies make the medication to treat the symptoms, not cure the illness, but to mask the symptoms.
They learn something about cycles, at least from school, I guess. Sorry.
Right. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your show.
Yes, you're welcome. So, Margaret, you're making a really important point. And I think that sometimes when people work within these industries, at least the people who are going to work every day, I don't think that they go realizing the, you know, they're busy and they don't know all the org chart of how these big ag, big pharma, actually, many of them are related to the fuel industry as well as the prison systems. You know, it's this giant, and the media. You know, it's this giant, overlapping, diversified corporate structures. And you know, it's almost like an add-on sale is what it looks like when you see the larger picture.
I once had a patient who told me that he had done a lot of research and recognized that the chemicals in Viagra are the same, are close to the same chemicals that are in the pesticides, one of the restricted use pesticides. And Viagra is a very expensive medication. And what he said to me was, I might as well take a sip of pesticide rather than spend $20 on a pill for erectile dysfunction.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, that's a good point. I'm gonna grab another caller.
And sorry to any of the callers that can't get through out there. We're just getting full of calls, and we can only take so many. So
you're on the air.
We're getting them.
Aloha.
Yeah, is that me?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. I also got the same call, and it seems like it's a very aggressive phone tree that is going on, Hawaii Farm and Food Association. And it was the same kind of total misinformation that this bill is going to disallow the farmers from using GMO seeds. And I immediately said, you know, this is incorrect information, and I think you have the wrong number. I hung up, but I just want to let listeners know that there is this campaign of, and it's a typical campaign of misinformation. So please be alert to that fact, and let's get the truth out there as much as possible. Aloha, that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Okay,
thank you,
aloha.
This is so great to hear about this firsthand. You know, these chemical companies, I'm not surprised at all. This is coming straight out of the Frank Luntz, mm-hmm. Wordsmith, you know, type of playbook. We're going to see a lot of misleading thing. So everybody gear up, fill up on mana, and show up.
And we've been seeing, you know, it's interesting how all this stuff happens now with all the social networking, because there's a personality, oddly, from the industry called Frank in Foods. Oh. And they're on their way over here. You know, that's the big hitters from the industry, and they're coming to Kauai, and they're going to the Big Island first and then coming here. We've got a caller on the air. Aloha.
Hi. Hello?
Yes.
Yes. I had to take my wife to the hospital today, and as she was coming back to the car, she had to wait in a little area where they had magazine racks. And stuffed into the magazine racks were all kinds of, not magazines, there were all kinds of pamphlets. And she grabbed one, and this one here is produced by BASF. And it says, right under their name, it says, The Chemical Company. And the title of the front page says, Communicating the Safety of Our Healthy Produce. And so they put it in the form of questions. Question one, are all pesticide residues in foods dangerous? Question number two, is organic produce safer than conventionally grown produce? And it goes on, and the one that kind of grabbed me was question number seven, what are the benefits to eating food that isn't organically grown? Answer, health, savings, the economy, and the environment. And they go on to say there is no conclusive evidence from the groups like the American Cancer Society, no conclusive evidence that organic foods carry a lower risk of cancer due to the absence of pesticides. Some benefits of eating modern agricultural food, the retail savings, about 47%. Increased productivity, the use of herbicides allows for conservative tillage, reducing fossil fuel use. And it goes on. There's question 8, question 9, question 10. Question 10 was bizarre. Do pesticides help protect food in our homes? And then they go into this bizarre thing about having roaches and rats in your house, which can give you asthmas and allergies, and it has absolutely nothing to do with growing non-GMO food. I don't even know why that thing was put in there, but it was the racks were packed with these pamphlets in the hospital. So just thought.
And so who, can you look on the back of it, who is the main organization, you might have already said it, who paid for those pamphlets?
BASF.
Ah.
It's called on the back it says BASF Agricultural Solutions. And it's www.agro.basf.com. And on the back page it says the major benefits of pesticides, increased food production, decreased cost of food, consumer benefits, household pest control. I see pesticide products to control household pests. Herbicides to control vegetation that clogs waterways, and pesticides to protect lawns, gardens, public parks, playing fields, lakes, and ponds for public enjoyment. So big time push for better living through chemistry from the BASF company.
Right. So that is basically a big advertisement in the hospital waiting room. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, and like I said, there may be one from other companies, but this was the only one that she grabbed, so that's what I could see.
Well, I hope she's doing better.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. I got a bunch of calls. Okay, Margaret, you want to say something?
This is very upsetting to me because as a healthcare provider, we give an oath to never harm our patients, and by not getting involved and not collecting information from our patients and not standing up to these chemical companies is guilt by omission, and it is, in fact, harming our patients.
So is there any kind of questions when people come in, when patients are sick, you must ask them a battery of questions? I mean, are you looking at diet? Are you looking at exposure?
Certainly.
Okay.
Yes.
And then, so do you have training to recognize these pesticides and how it might be? I mean, when you're on the West Side, you must know that they are being bathed in this stuff.
Acute exposure is different than chronic exposure. Acute exposure would land somebody in the emergency room if it got in their eyes, if they got in their mouth, if it caused a terrible reaction to the skin or terrible asthma. But that's very different from chronic exposure. And I mostly see chronic exposure. But what I feel is that we are poisoning our next generation. And it's starting from the fetal stage. And people may not get sick till they're in their 30s or 40s, but it's starting at a very early stage because we have very little bodies that are getting very high concentrations of these chemicals compared to an adult body.
Right, and we're seeing outbreaks of things like autism over the past 15 years. There's a lot of different long-term disorders.
And one of the disorders that I commonly see is, and that I've read on these labels, are hormone problems. So women with irregular periods, not able to get pregnant, facial hair, raspy voice, and they're definitely causing a change towards, you know, a male type physique and the inability to get pregnant.
For women.
Mm-hmm.
And of any age? Like, is it happening at 40, 30, 20, 50?
I'd say I see that in all ages of reproduction, yes.
So you're seeing infertility in their 20s even?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm especially seeing facial hair and changes in voice, like lower voice, and irregular periods, which means that there's generally not ovulation occurring, so generally cannot get pregnant or will likely not get pregnant.
One of the pieces that they brought up during the West Side meeting about all these pesticides were that these pesticides are actually more detrimental to the youth because they have a higher respiratory rate. They, for their size, they breathe in more air per pound of like body weight. So for their size, they're getting about pretty much the same amount of chemicals as we are, but we're, you know, double, triple, quadruple most of these kids' weights. So it's definitely affecting the kids more than it is the adults. And we're just starting to see the effects now. We don't even know what the long-term effects are.
And these chemicals like atrazine that influence things like estrogen and testosterone, it doesn't take much. You know, when you think about birth control pills, it's a very, very low dose. It's a very small dose is enough to alter your system.
But it is still a whole lot more than what your system produces. Like, I liked how the one person had expressed from the scientific perspective, a little bit of estrogen helps you be fertile. A lot of estrogen is called birth control. I have a very patient way to call it.
Yeah, I was going to say that is on the Waimea highlight reel that I made. That is up on Vimeo now, but you're not allowed to watch it for a half an hour until the show's over.
And what did they look? What would they search for it on?
Waimea pesticide report. And if you type that in, you'll see the highlight reel, which is 15 minutes, and you'll also see the full version, which is an hour and 20. So your choice.
On Vimeo. Okay. Aloha. Thank you for holding.
No problem.
You've been patient.
There's it's really interesting to hear all the different forms that this kind of block out propaganda thing that they're trying to pull off is taking. And I'm wondering if anyone else has gotten the phone call that we got last night. It purports to be like a forum about this bill, and you know, you can press zero to ask a question or something like that. I didn't actually interact that much with the robot. I was eating dinner, so I didn't really have a chance to listen to it, but I did record it. And the bits that I did hear, it basically sounded like they're setting up these questions. I don't know if there were actually people calling in asking these questions or if it was pre-recorded or what. But they basically were kind of like straw man questions, and then these really scientific expert sounding people would come up and tell you all the reasons why chemicals are, you know, basically the bomb.
I did see that posted. Somebody very meticulously wrote them down, and there wasn't really a very good opportunity to in the punch list. I'm trying to find it really quick on the internet here of, you know, the opportunities you could press 0 for a certain answer, 1 for another. They didn't give you an opportunity to really dispute it. And people have said when they put a question forward that is in opposition to the viewpoint, it never did get asked.
Yeah, I pretty much assumed that would happen, so I didn't bother to. But I did record it, and I'm glad someone else, you know, took the initiative and really got that out there, because I think we need to expose how desperate they are and how much they're just lying through their teeth. And I gotta say, Felicia, I mean, bless your heart, I don't think they're gonna change. You know, these little things they're doing, like a cover crop here or, you know, a windbreak there, it's not really addressing the whole issue. It's like, you know, a rapist starts using a condom, we're not all going to say, oh, well, great, isn't he a wonderful rapist now? It's,
right.
You know, it's kind of a sick analogy, but I think it's apropos, because what are they doing to our land here on the island, really?
Well,
if it's not rapist, it's murder.
I mean, I guess I'm just trying to really hope for the best. I might be unrealistic. I appreciate what you're saying, and I'm just a diehard optimist. So I do, having been a business person for many years, I know it certainly is possible to do a 180-degree shift. It is possible.
Yeah, you have to want to.
As
a previous caller said, their reason for existence is selling chemicals, so it seems highly unlikely that they're going to embrace a chemical-free way of doing business, way of growing food. And so, you know, I'm sure everyone's seen the movie Avatar.
Mm-hmm.
And for anyone on the island that feels passionately about this issue, there's this kind of touchstone moment in that film, for me at least, and it's at the very end of the movie, where they pack up all the bad guys onto their ship and they ship them off. And that's what I would love to see for this island. And I'll leave you with that.
Okay, and I want to share the call options with you. 9, you can leave call and make a statement. 0, you can make a comment question. 1, for opposition to the bill and can make meeting. 2, not sure if can make meeting. Or 3, can't make meeting. But there was nothing, no call option to support the bill. So that's almost humorous. I just laugh. Like, if I was the company that paid for this set of calls to go out, I would be upset, because I might as well
know
my opposition.
Yeah.
And for those who actually want to view the bill, to clear up any misunderstandings, please just go to stoppoisoningparadise.com and you'll be able to view it there.
Or Kilauea Neighborhood Association, if you look at their site too, they have the bill in there. And so both websites are really great. Stoppoisoningparadise.com is it .org or .com?
.org.
.org is really centered around this bill with all kinds of information. If you look at Kilauea Neighborhood Association's site, they have a really strong position on it. But it's interesting, because if you look at the names on there, these are Sugar Generation descendants. And there is unanimous support for 2491. Thank you.
Aloha.
Aloha, caller.
I think something we haven't brought up much is the effect on the economy. I have a patient who moved here and started a business, and it's a thriving business. And since she moved to Kekaha, her and her husband have been very ill with asthma, other respiratory problems, and the medications are not working for them, and they're leaving. And that was a source of revenue for the West Side, and now that's ending.
Mm-hmm. I spoke with a teacher who had to leave the island too. She lived in Waimea, and she was this extraordinary teacher at Chiefs, and did all kinds of great programs in the ocean and got awards, and, you know, I did a search on her name, so she was really accurate. But at 35, she was surfacing cancer, and she was really worried about all the dust and just having such a hard time, and she loved her job. She loved what she did here. She comes back every summer. But their family had to move to the mainland because they couldn't even sell their house in Waimea for hardly anything, and they would have just been happy to move to Lihue or north, but they were financially pushed off the island. And, you know, they come every summer, but with a lot of angst and tears because they don't want to be gone. We have another caller.
Hello, yeah. Caller, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. I was at the council meeting, and I talked to one of the Pioneer people, and they invited me out to the plant. I went last week, and it's an interesting place to go, but part of the meeting was convince me that that the products are safe. And what they did is they gave me 600 scientific articles to look through, and I looked through them, and not one of them showed that it was safe. It was an attempt to overwhelm me with information, but I'm knowledgeable, and my background is such that I could read those articles. Not one of the 600 indicated that there was safety, that the products that they were using.
So pretty much they wanted to make you feel safe by giving you a giant stack of papers that they were hoping you wouldn't read through and know what
you're
looking at.
Exactly. Exactly. And when I read through them, I wasn't surprised, but it was remarkable that not one of the 600 indicated that they had proven safety in humans.
Yeah, that's sadly funny.
Well, it's kind of... I'm sorry?
It's not surprising, she said.
No, and it's kind of sad that when I was talking to the scientists, they kept repeating the same mantras that it was, it's safe and everything. We have a lot of peer-reviewed data. And I said, I'd be happy to read it objectively just to give you a chance to show that, in all sincerity, that you're trying to put that you're trying to effectively study this and you're doing your due diligence. And so they it was not surprising, and I think that their intent is to overwhelm people with half truths and hope that no one's knowledgeable enough. And what scares me is I hope that the council people are wise enough to know that it's that the chemicals are very toxic, have significant effects, and that they don't believe just by them saying that they're safe that they are safe. Don't know how to get that message across to them.
You know, I love the level of education our community has achieved. It makes my heart sing when I meet people like you that have looked into this in a scientific way and come to their conclusions. We really need to hope this for the council as well. When we really do see, you know, adult onset asthma, juvenile full-blown diabetes, these things were not at all common before GMO testing and experimentation started to be so prevalent on Kauai. So we really have got to, all Rainbow Warriors, come forth on the 31st. We need these stories to be told. We have got to get through to the county council that we have been asking for years. Show us the data. They cannot. The industry will even get up and leave a meeting when good information begins to be shared. They want to be able to preserve their right to say, we see no harm. If you don't look, you won't see harm.
And they also have these things about, like, two different factors coming together, because I've been looking at this the cell towers and all the EMF that's out there. And when you have convergent problems, it might be really accelerating it. But like the biotech says, well, you know, you can't prove it's us. And the EMF challenge, they say you can't prove it's us. And maybe it's both.
Well, the argument that the pioneer scientists were saying is that the evidence from the people that are passionate against the non-GMO is that is circumstantial. So I said, please show me your proof that convince me that what you're doing, you've looked into the safety. And 600 papers in zero out of 600 indicated anything that would indicate that the stuff they're doing has a positive benefit. Zero out of 600. And I'm certain they anticipated that I wouldn't read them.
You can only think that they either have not looked or they have looked and chose not to look any further, or they have looked and they aren't bringing us the data. Either way, it's not a good situation. We cannot trust these people for our safeguards.
Well, you know, the thing that struck me is that at the plant itself, when I went in there, I had compassion for the workers there because it is a nice place. They take good care of their workers. And the workers and the people that are present believe that what they're doing is right. What struck me when I got the proof from the corporation that the people were quoting as saying, there's plenty of data, there's peer-reviewed studies, there's hundreds of them. People believed it, but I don't think anyone looked into it. And the individuals that are on the West Side that are passionate about protecting their company, I had more understanding for that. I think this is from the highest level. I think the companies purposely duped their employees. It took me a long time to go through those papers. There's the employees, I'm certain most of them wouldn't understand the papers.
Well,
but they just repeat that I think this is from corporate higher up.
I want to throw something in here, and then I got to take some other calls, but you know, we've heard, I'm pretty sure this is accurate, that the Chamber of Commerce is planning to host a roundtable for business leaders on July 30th with the pro-GMO advocates. And so that is a really interesting thing that they would be doing that because, you know, we're still waiting to confirm the details, but we're hoping that they will allow Gary Hooser to be there and give both sides of the issue equal time because... those of us who are advocates for this bill are not being invited, but there is, I'm getting insider information from that is something that's happening. And so, you know, when you hear all one position, then it's hard not to be biased. Although I will say people who listen to this radio show, very rarely does the West Side call in that is pro the GMO. There's very few of that, so we don't hear it.
Hey, but
much.
We'd love to hear more.
Yes. So please call in if you're in an opposition. Thank you, caller. I have some others waiting.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you for holding. I know you have a slightly different topic for a moment.
Oh, I do.
Okay, go ahead.
Thank you so much. And once again, thank you for your folks' disseminating, you know, information and trying to make people aware of something that is crucially, crucially important. And if I can, just for one moment, just put in a brief element of my own manato on this, personally. I just don't understand how poisons are ponal. Beyond that, or that said, what I would like to put out to the community on the North Shore is that tomorrow, July 24th, the North Shore Aspects of Access and the Open Space Commission is going to be, I believe, either at the library or at that community center in Princeville.
Oh, okay. What time?
And I believe that the time frame is 6:30.
Okay, I'm going to be there. 6:30, Princeville Library.
Okay, excuse me. Hold on one second. Could you let me check on that information?
Okay. And then so Princeville
what?
Library Open Space Commission. That sounds okay. Really important. Is it 6:30 Princeville Library?
I think it is.
Okay. And actually, even give me a call at home. I'm such a space cadet.
Right.
But I want to be there. That's very important.
Yes, it is.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome. Thank you once again for the show.
Okay.
Aloha.
Aloha. You're on the air. You're
Aloha.
On? Yes. Can you turn your radio off?
Yeah. Let me turn it down.
Turn it off.
Okay. Okay, yes. Sorry. Well, now I forgot what I was going to say.
We were talking maybe about the Chamber of Commerce meeting or the Open Space Committee.
Well, first, I'd like to say that I think that you are so wonderful for thinking that the companies will change. But from what I can see, I don't see that happening whatsoever. And they will fight tooth and nail. These companies have been around forever. They're war chemical companies, and they sell war chemicals, and that's why they grow food that needs these chemicals. And it's really sad.
You're getting nodding heads in the studio here.
What I'd like to say is that what I saw today on Facebook on the pro-GMO page floored me. That two people who are on that page are willing to sit and drink glyphosate, or actually not even glyphosate. They will drink Roundup to prove it's safe. That is so scary that these people believe in it so much that they're willing to drink a poison chemical to prove it's safe.
Now, I saw that, and I was hoping people wouldn't bait them, because that would be really unfortunate.
Wouldn't it be? I mean, it's so sad. And I got a call today from somebody whose uncle drank Roundup and died. And people use it to kill themselves. So why would employees be so set or scared for their jobs that they're willing to drink poison? It's really sad. And I'm hoping that we can find some way to come together with these people. And I've been trying, but so far, no luck.
Well, we need to help them, keep their employment up. And actually, drinking the chemicals is how the Indian farmers from Indians, have often taken their own lives, because they cannot get out of debt. And by taking their own life, that debt doesn't stick with their family. That's why there's the 250,000 plus suicides that has happened in India over this industry.
Due to their debt to GMO companies, from switching mm-hmm. to conventional farming to GMO farming.
Yes.
But the two people that were willing to drink it was a teaspoon. And to me, it just seems that they are so completely convinced that that these companies aren't doing any harm, because that's all they know.
It's definitely scary. And what's even more scary is how hard these companies are trying to make sure this bill does not pass. It's really just a right to know bill. And it's just scary to think why they're trying so hard to make sure everyone doesn't know what they're doing.
Yeah, it seems like not even that big of a step. I mean, for the West Side folks, it is just a gesture towards
exactly.
their safety.
Right. This bill isn't about whether or not pesticides are bad or toxic.
Or if GMOs
are
bad.
Disclosure. Mm-hmm. And precautionary
principles. Well, it's about taking a break and a step back, and it's reasonable. And the problem with all of that is, and I support this bill 100%, but I don't believe that it protects the people that are in Waimea, downwind from Pioneer. I have friends who are sick, who are tired, and have been fighting this company for over 10 years, and they don't get any reprieve or any relief from it every single day of the year. And if there is going to be an amendment, I would like to see an amendment where they put up some sort of windbreak up above at the Pioneer Research Facility, so that those people downwind at least get some kind of protection.
Will you be coming on Wednesday?
I will.
Okay, good. Maybe you could say that in your testimony.
I will.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you. Uh-huh. Aloha.
Aloha.
Thank you for holding. You're on the air.
Yeah, thank you. And so much of what I could say has already been said before, so I'm just going to limit my huge repertoire of information to a couple of things. In every contact I've made with West Side people working for these companies, the people I've met have been very sweet and nice, and 100% not only uneducated, but vastly de-educated, obviously, by the companies that they work for. And that is so sad. These people are being used. They're being exposed to these chemicals. They're being unarmed, you know, mentally and safety-wise. And it's just horrible what's happening. And I think the companies should pay for a blood and or urine test for every single one of them, and they should all insist on it. And that would prove, I guess, a little more than they know already.
Mm-hmm. This is Margaret again. I'm currently working with a laboratory to develop a lab profile or lab, a set of labs with that involved collecting urine, possibly hair samples, blood samples, to see if these chemicals are in the bodies of the people on the West Side, especially people who work in the fields. I did want to also mention that from other providers, what I've heard is that they have seen cancers that they normally would not see in such a small population, rare cancers, and that most of the people diagnosed with neuromuscular disorders such as Parkinson's, ALS, multiple sclerosis are coming from the West Side. And these, a lot of these diagnoses are not reportable diagnoses, so it's very hard to get those statistics. But this is what I'm hearing from other providers.
Maybe because some of the employees fear their jobs and are threatened, maybe they could anonymously give blood and or hair samples just with some proof that they worked in the industry, just so that the industry wouldn't be able to send in people who have never been exposed with the pretense of showing that they were clean, even though, you know what I mean? You can't, they could be up to just about anything, you know? They're so uncompromising in how they fight the battle. And I just wanted to spend one moment just to give kudos to a local business. I was in a Healthy Hut the other day in Kilauea, and they had posted on their cash register of companies that thwart the labeling thing in California. And I just thought that was pretty wonderful that a business was willing to step up and lose some business to support something that they really believed in. And they got more of my business just because of that. And that's what we all need to do. We all need to give a little so we can win in the long run. And I really appreciate anybody that can make that kind of a stance.
Yeah, thank you. And I'm looking at a testimony from an oncology nurse practitioner that works in the hospital here in Kauai. And this is a testimony that she sent to the county council looking at the cancer rates. And even though Kauai has the lowest incident rate for overall cancer for the period of 2006 to 2007 compared to Hawaii State and the other counties, it has the highest incident rate for non-Hodgkin's lymphoma in the West Side. There's a concentration of that. And that she goes on to speak about the fat tissues and where the fat tissues hold these pesticides, and I don't want to read the whole thing, but how it, that is what expresses itself in non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. And she's got a whole bunch of, that I did look at on my own, scientific study links that do in fact say what she's saying, yeah, and tying it back to these.
And we definitely have to, with that kind of information, bear in mind that some of these things take a long time before they finally surface. They're accumulative. They do build up in our bones and our fatty tissues, depending on what the chemical is, and it may not happen for years or decades. And sometimes they tout the idea, well, look, we put up with sugar and pineapple, why not put up with us? You know, we are still feeling the effects of all the people that got poisoned by the sugar and the pineapple industry. And some of that is still yet to surface in future generations. It's not over yet. And now we're putting these chemicals on top of all those chemicals. I mean, it's just...
Common sense
is lacking.
On top of a collapsing economic system. And I think that that's a really interesting layer to be putting on it. Collapsing economic system, and we are definitely past peak oil and these different energy elements. So the generation that is still yet growing up is going to be facing all these things with a lot less resources to be overcoming them than has been in, you know, the generation that is mature.
Yeah, I sure would like to see someone make a little bit more clear and thorough economic report showing how much these companies get away with tax subsidies, water subsidies, electric subsidies, and their multinational corporations. They're sending all their profits elsewhere. It's not even like a mom-and-pop farm, you know, that lives right here and is supporting the local economy. We get so little, and we pay so much, and we're put at so much risk. It's just horrendous.
Right.
It's not a good deal.
They don't even pay property taxes or GE taxes.
It's horrible.
We need to confirm that, but that is certainly what we, it looks like they're in the enterprise zone. Thank you, caller.
We're
just about at the end of our show. Thank you so much. We're going to have jazz, the history of jazz with Kirk Smart, I believe, at the top of the hour, unless he is on vacation and John would come in with Jazz with John.
And if neither of them are here, you'll just have to listen to us for longer. Hooray!
But they'll be here. So we're going to go around the room and let everybody give a final statement. I'd like to start with you, Margaret.
I have patients who are both workers for these companies and community members that are affected by these sprays. And I think it was an intentional act to for these companies to pick a population that is concerned more with the next meal rather than the long-term effects, because they are living paycheck to paycheck. They focus on the people who are generally oppressed or poor because they know that they can't as easily stand up to the companies.
Mm-hmm. It's very typical. Jennifer?
Thank you.
Hey, I want to also say you and Eric were high school buddies and on the same wrestling team, and you beat him.
Yeah, I used to whip Eric's butt.
She was a
wrestling
senior. I was a freshman. It wasn't fair.
Now he's probably 15 inches taller than you. No, 14 probably. Anyway.
Probably like 4 feet taller than me.
Yeah, I was a little fat kid when me and Jen met in ninth grade for me.
Yeah.
But yeah, wrestling is where I got started.
So you're closing?
Right, thank you. Well, I just wanted to say this bill does 7 things, and only these 7 things. 1, requires disclosure. 2, creates buffer zones between public areas, waterways, and schools. 3, prohibits open-air testing. 4, calls for an environmental impact statement. Creates a moratorium for increased pesticide or GMO activity. And develops a permitting process based on the EIS results. That's all. It does not cost jobs, and it does not cause any industries to shut down and go away. Please come Wednesday. It starts at 1:30. Please come a little early to sign up and get in.
I think there's going to be some great music out there and stuff,
Wednesday
too.
Wednesday the 31st at KCC.
Yes. You are listening to KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea. Our jazz show is running a little late, so we have a caller from Waimea who really wants to come on the air. Then we'll hear from Jerry. Aloha, you are on the air. You got to be quick.
Hello?
Yeah, sorry from Waimea, yeah.
Yeah.
Waimea Research Facility. Waimea Research Facility. You're right across my house. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Been trying to deal with them since the year 2000. And the way I had interpreted all what they were saying to me was all a bunch of lies. They said they're going to work with the community. They never. They said they're going to try and do what they're supposed to do, like try to keep the dust down. They never. They said they're going to make windbreaks. I heard all the guys before me about windbreaks, dust breaks. All that does not work. We see dust flying over the dust break, which they went deal 12 feet high. The dust go over that thing 30, 40, 50 feet over that thing. So I don't know how people can assume that that kind of stuff is going to work, because I see it with my own eyes. That thing, no work. No work. And
so,
like I said, I only going to speak against this company that is right here in Waimea.
So I want to understand what you're saying. Are you saying that this ordinance won't work because they don't follow what they make their commitments to anyway? Like if this
they've been doing it from the year 2000, lady. You never hear what I just said.
No, I'm trying to get
it. They've been doing it from the year 2000. They say they're going to do this. They're not doing it. All they do is lie. And like I said, I only speaking to this company right across the river. All they did was from the year 2000, just lie. You know, when what else can people say? Oh, us guys in Waimea, we clean tricks. No, it's not about that. The only way people will understand is they live over here and then they know. This place, every day, you gotta deal with dust. They spray in 25 knot winds. I've seen them with my own eyes in the night. All you see is one light in the field going. And what you hear? The moral raving. It's the nitro spear. I get pictures of that. But, like I say, you tell them that, they're gonna say it wasn't them. You know what? You guys all have a good one. Enjoy you guys' information. But like I said before, get it from the source. Don't get it from guys that think they know what they're talking. Aloha.
Aloha. Thank you.
Thank you.
You know, he is so right. We have continually seen them lie and deceive the community. They have killed and removed windbreaks, ironwood trees. It has done nothing but increase the amount of dust and chemical drift going into our communities. And part of the reason these huge conglomerate poisoning groups are here is in part because we are too nice. Mm-hmm. And we're always going to have our aloha. But this is a chance for Kauai to shine. We need the Rainbow Warriors to come out in true Kauaian fashion. We need to speak these stories one after another after another. And I congratulate Margaret and Jen for coming and bringing their truth here to the station today, because it's been a long time coming to get the healthcare professionals to take notice and to start to talk with us and share their observations. So please, everyone, come. If you know anybody who is on the fence on this issue, please direct them to alelo.org. That's the community station on Oahu. Alelo.org has the GMO Week shows archived. And the GMO Week was Hawaii Seed and the industry, both answering similar questions. And I think anyone who watches that really will be able to make up their own mind. It's pretty apparent. When you break it down about pesticides and health.
Okay, great. And it's almost great that Kirk is a little bit late. He will be here. We've got this one last little caller waiting. And then, okay, you got to go quick, but you are on the air. Turn your radio off, please.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes, so quick.
Okay, as far as the studies being, well, right now, I just heard her saying there were 7 points or whatever to this thing. I think that all of the new regulations should be based on current scientific knowledge that we have, including like from Brazil and Europe, because they've been doing GMO studies. And we need that information to be included, not just based on an EIS, which could be very limited to the money that they're spending on the project.
That's right. It's easy to get a bias. It's easy to get an off-balance study.
Yeah, so I wouldn't make any regulations based on that hocus pocus.
Thank you so much for calling.
Okay, thank you very much.
Aloha.
Aloha. So you have been listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea with Felicia and Eric. Oh, also K284 AL Holly Eva. Eric, do you want to say goodbye?
Goodbye. Yeah. Everyone, thank you for a great show, and I hope to see you there on the 31st. And got to defend Kauai and stand up for what's right.